Hello and welcome to Out in the Bay, gay radio from San Francisco. Our lives, our voices. I'm Eric Jansen. This week, lawyers and taxes and bonds. Oh, yes. Inequality hits queer people right in the assets. Remember all that hype a few years back about the marriage penalty? Well, actually, most of the penalties come if you cannot marry. Federal law encourages, enables, and in many financial arenas requires anti-gay discrimination in taxes, pensions, Social Security, and other retirement funding, real estate, healthcare insurance, and more. My two expert guests will fill us in on the extra hoops LGBT folks must go through to protect themselves and their families financially. They'll also give practical tips for anyone, yes, straight people too, in a relationship not recognized by the U.S. government, whether or not it's recognized by your state. They've got lots of great detailed info we'll try to cram into the next half hour, so get out your pens and paper while I introduce them. Susan Von Herman is an estate planning and trust attorney in the San Francisco office of the Schiff Hardin Law Firm, which she recently joined as a partner. She specializes in and speaks frequently about estate and financial planning issues affecting gay and lesbian couples whose marriages and other partnerships are not recognized by the federal government. She also works with straight couples, some of whom choose not to marry, which brings them similar challenges to those of married same-sex couples. Susan Von Herman, welcome to Out in the Bay.
Thank you.
Mark Grace is a financial advisor and first vice president at Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, currently working in the firm's San Francisco office. He's been an advisor for more than 20 years and says financial planning for LGBT couples is much more complex than for their straight counterparts. The rules are different and keep changing, he says. There are many wealth management areas in which same-sex couples are discriminated against. Mark Grace, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks to both of you for being here. So, Mark, I want to start with you first. When you sit down with an individual or couple for the first time, what are the key things you're assessing in helping him or her or them set financial goals and plans? I mean, this is really the essence of how we try to take care of ourselves and the ones we love in this world, in which money and assets are, you know, really affect our comfort, our health, and our happiness.
Sure, Eric. When I first meet with clients, I really try to assess what is important to them, their goals, their retirement, what risk they're willing to take, what assets they have. And working with gay and lesbian couples, I find that there's that much more of a complexity to how things should actually be titled in one's account. It's really important for me to understand their legal status. Are they registered domestic partners? What is the history of their relationship and how long have they been together? What assets do they have and how do they hold them? And who else do they care about? I actually was in a 9-year relationship and I have 2 kids that are very important to me. And it's really important for me to make sure in my planning they are provided for in the future.
And because you are gay, does it make planning for your children harder than if you were in a straight relationship? I mean, obviously, in this case, you have children from a previous relationship.
Right. And I have no legal rights with those kids, but they are very important to me. And it is a different type of planning. They're not direct, my relatives per se by blood relatives, but they still are who I want to provide for as beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm. And Susan, similar question for you. When you first sit down with the client, a new person for the first time, and what is it that you're looking for to assess what they have and what they need to have in the means of documents, for example, right, to protect their estate, protect their what they want to pass on to their survivor and when they die?
A lot of the same things that Mark's looking at, of course, what their assets are, what their family looks like. I find, there are certain clients, straight clients, who come in, and I probably know what their plan will look like before I even meet them based on preliminary information that I have. And with my gay clients, absolutely, anything is possible. I think that family, just as Mark pointed out, children don't need to be legally related to you to be considered your children. I have clients who, are leaving assets to former partners, and all the assumptions people make about family of origin, whether that's, there's still a connection there. It's all over the map. So we spend a lot of time getting to know, asking questions, trying to get down to values and as well as financial goals, which are very important in estate planning.
So let's get to the main things that make this whole process so much more complex and complicated for gay and lesbian couples, or any couple, if a straight couple chooses not to marry. But for a gay and lesbian couple, they can marry in some states, and they could marry briefly in California, but basically those marriages aren't recognized by the federal government anyway.
Right.
So what is it that makes this stuff more complicated for them?
Currently in California, it's possible to register as domestic partners, which come with that come all the spousal rights under state law. And there are some important spousal rights like medical decision making, freedom from reassessment when real estate transfers, basic inheritance rights. It's also, there are, I think, 32,000 couples who, or people, maybe 16,000 couples who married in 2008. So there are legally married gay and lesbian couples in California, as well as lots of couples who came in from the outside with that status from somewhere else.
From other states. They got married in some other state. New York, they could have moved here.
Yeah, married in Massachusetts, moved here. A civil union in Connecticut when that was, you know, before marriage, moved here. The issue is, the problem is, no matter what a couple's legal status, if they have legal status, they don't have any federal rights. And most of the most important financial benefits of marriage, of federally recognized marriage, are federal. So, for example, the big one is the unlimited marital deduction. And what that means is there's a philosophy in our country that there shouldn't be a state tax until the second spouse dies, that the family wealth should stay together. So, for example, Bill Gates can die and Melinda can keep the whole thing. There's not a penny of estate tax as long as it goes to Melinda.
And when she dies, then
the taxes are paid. But, you know, presumably that's fine because nobody's depending on her at that point. Or there's an exemption. With a gay couple, no matter what their legal status, gay or lesbian couple, there is not that unlimited marital deduction. So there can very easily be estate tax at the first death. Now, right now, the current law is there's a $5 million exemption, which is a big number. And for many, many people, that solves the problem. Problem is, unless there's legislation in 2013, 1 year from now, the exemption will be $1 million. And in California, $1 million.
That's a very easy amount of assets for somebody to gather between their real estate and also their portfolio. This is something that can really make a terrible impact on a couple's wealth and make them force them to actually do something that they don't necessarily want to do, i.e. selling their property or figuring out how to get some liquidity.
Well, yeah, and you certainly hear about people who lose their homes because their partner dies and they can't pay the taxes. It's been reassessed. They can't cough up the money they need, and out they go.
So important to plan for. One other thing that I've actually come to realize is with straight couples, a married couple, if the first spouse passes and there's a retirement plan, the retirement plan immediately goes into an IRA rollover that can compound free of taxes until the age of 70 and a half. In a registered domestic partner situation or same-sex couple, what will happen is that IRA will be rolled over, but distributions have to be made immediately that year. And that can have a dramatic impact. If you're looking at like a 20 or 30 year period of time, the dollars and the impact that can have on one's wealth is quite large.
Let me make sure I understand that right. So what you're saying is if a married couple, one dies and there's an IRA rollover, something like that, the surviving spouse does not have to, they don't have to take those, they don't start to have to start taking that money.
Exactly. It can continue to grow, Eric, free of taxes until the age of 70 and a half, upon which time they have to start taking some distributions.
But a survivor and another, any relationship that's not recognized by the federal government,
there you go,
i.e. a same-sex marriage, can't do that.
Immediately they have to start taking distributions, and they don't get the power of compounding, which is really
can be significant over time. That's what they tell us. Save $20 a year now, and by the time you're 50, you'll have, I don't know.
And it goes back to this philosophy that there should be, the family wealth should stay together till the second spouse dies. There's a special rule for spouses called the spousal rollover. Problem is, you have to be a federally recognized spouse to take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, there are some moves afoot to challenge. There are some challenges to the Federal Defense of Marriage Act, which is what this is all based on. But when you meet with couples who are planning their financial lives, are you finding that they're going like, well, the Defense of Marriage Act is going to pass, is going to be repealed sometime soon, so this isn't going to be a big concern for me?
Susan and I were both talking that it's really important for people to plan for today, that to just assume that things are going to take care of themselves is a real mistake. And one of the things I find really, it's very sad when people actually do a lot to accumulate their wealth and have guarded it very closely, and they actually haven't done the right thing to actually protect it and make sure it goes into the hands of who is important to them.
And I think it's almost the opposite. Sometimes people are so negative about this that they become paralyzed. I think that decision-making is another huge issue. It's not just about where your assets are going to go. It's about who's going to be the person who the doctors are talking to if you're in the emergency room. Who is going to be the person making financial decisions for you if you're incapacitated? When we talk about estate planning and financial planning, the idea is don't wait till you're at the end of your life and take care of it then. It's very, very important because things can happen at any point.
I wanted to stress the fact that this is also not just for wealthy people, that this actually applies to everybody, that really making sure that you have a health care directive and that you have your financial affairs, and people are intimidated by the word estate planning.
Right. I'm really glad you brought that up, because that thought is, oh, estate, that's like if you got a lot of money, you need to worry about what happens to all these, you know, all these houses and all this money you have. But it's also the really basic stuff like having a healthcare directive so that, what is it called? A living power of attorney, if that's right.
It's called a healthcare directive in California. Yeah.
Oh, there's different words in different states.
Well, right? There are. And the other thing to remember is even if you have those rights because you're registered or you're married, a same-sex married couple here, the minute you break your leg in Nevada on a ski trip where there's no registered domestic partnership, you are not related. So we have a patchwork of laws at this point in this country. And unless you stay in California all the time, it's pretty dangerous not to have done the same thing contractually.
So let's just take that for a second. So I'm married to a woman, let's say. I go to Nevada. She's got health care coverage. I don't. But anyway, so I've got it through her. I go to Nevada, break my leg, I'm covered. But now I go to Nevada in a gay relationship, and unless I have specific documentation, or let's make it something worse than just breaking a leg, I'm in some kind of thing where I can't talk.
A coma.
And someone has to make some decisions for me or about me.
Right.
Sure.
No one else can do it unless I've got this paperwork.
They're going to look to your next of kin, that's your parents, if you have parents. And if you don't have parents, it's going to be your siblings. There could easily, it's the Terri Schiavo thing all over again. And that's a good point, too. They were married, straight married couple. She didn't have a health care directive. And doctors are very hesitant to make decisions when family members are fighting. Even though her husband had the legal right to to tell them to pull the plug, they wouldn't do it because she hadn't expressed her own wishes. So it's nobody should rely on the default protections of the law, regardless of their status.
So, but estate planning is more than just, it's those kinds of things
way
as
more.
Well.
Right.
That's like a really important point to make here. So let's get back to the status question. You mentioned that you need to establish the relationship status of a couple, whether they're married here, married somewhere else, domestic partners only. And how many different variations can there be? How do you do that when you meet with a client? How do you figure out exactly what set of rules are going to apply to them?
Well, and that's why, really, I think working with an expert like Susan is important. So much of this has to do with when did people first register as domestic partners? How are things recognized? Understanding the time frame, understanding that what the priorities are is really, really important. And how a document is actually written can have huge bearing. And if it's not written properly, it can impact people in a terrible way.
The reason status matters so much is because we have community property in California. So in order to figure out what is whose. We need to know what's community property and what's separate property. In California, it's fairly simple. There are registered domestic partners who have all the state rights of spouses.
And responsibilities.
And responsibilities, the community debt. And there are a limited number of California married gay and lesbian couples in that four-month period in 2008. Those marriages are still valid.
And from the for our purposes here, they're essentially the same. Because
they have the same rights.
Right.
Exactly. And that's something I'd like to mention, too, that the case that's currently pending, Perry versus Brown, started out Perry versus Schwarzenegger, that attacks our state law Defense of Marriage Act. If that is overturned, if the state DOMA goes away, all couples will have who are married in California are the state rights and responsibilities of married couples. It doesn't do anything to affect federal DOMA.
Right, and people could get married here, but then still they would be under the same, they'd basically be in the same situation as they are now as registered domestic partners.
Exactly. When you look outside California, and we are a mobile society, there are lots of people that have relationships that are solemnized in another place. So basically the rule is on marriage, if you were married before Prop 8, you're married in California. So if you're married in Massachusetts, for example, before Prop 8, you're married in California. If you were married after Prop 8, outside of the state, you're not married, but you still have all the rights and responsibilities of spouses.
So let me
but
get
no
this,
label.
Let me make sure I understand this. If a couple got married in Massachusetts before Proposition 8 passed, and then they moved here to California, they're not considered married here.
They are considered married
here. They are considered married here. Because
right.
the California state law recognizes full faith and credit clause. They recognize the marriages performed in other states.
Right.
Okay, so the post and pre-pop Prop 8
discussion.
Confusing already.
On the registered domestic partnership side, if, you know, there are other states that have civil unions, Illinois just passed legislation to do that. The standard in the statute in California is whether it's substantially equivalent. So most states that have that sort of arrangement, there are 9 states plus D.C. have either civil union or domestic partnership. We think that should all be recognized here. There are 3 states that provide limited spousal rights. Those would be relationships that wouldn't be recognized here as registered domestic partnership. So you have to figure out what California law is, what the law outside California is, and then how California views the law outside California.
Wow. Okay. So that is a lot.
Many
that
steps.
Is a lot. Yeah. Many steps indeed. Okay. You're listening to Out in the Bay. I'm Eric Jansen. My guests are financial advisor Mark Grace, a Morgan Stanley Smith Barney vice president, and Susan Von Herman, a partner at Schiff Hardin Law Firm, who specializes in estate planning and trust administration. We're talking about how federal law, specifically the U.S. government not recognizing same-sex marriages or partnerships, financially penalizes LGBT couples. And in the process, so we're hopefully getting a little bit of tips, financial planning tips and advice on how to make sure you and your loved ones are protected. You mentioned, Susan, that you work with a lot of straight couples. I guess you both do. But
yes.
We don't discriminate.
Yeah, great. Do you find that there's reasons why straight couples aren't marrying? And I think when we spoke on the phone the other day, you said that there are some areas in which it can be a benefit, a financial benefit, not to marry.
Yeah, you want me to answer that? The primary benefit, or one of the benefits, is older couples where one of them is receiving Social Security survivor benefits from a previous marriage will lose those benefits if he or she remarries. So actually, when AB 205 was enacted, along with the gay and lesbian community, the Gray Panthers were behind it. Because these straight couples, older straight couples, wanted to have a legal relationship without losing their federal benefits. So there's that group. There are also, I have clients who just don't think it's important for whatever reason. Those are kind of in the minority. I have clients who, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie won't marry till everyone can. There are all kinds of reasons that people choose not to. And the most obvious one being a prior relationship that went bad, and marriage seems
they don't want to do it
seems
again.
Scary. Exactly. That's the most common one.
Okay, fair enough. Now, also when we spoke the other day, you mentioned that you had met a couple recently who was like a classic example of a whole bunch of these issues all in one relationship.
And Susan worked with that couple. It was very intricate, just dealing with some stock options and some technology holdings that had dated back, and kind of the issue of status and how that was all going to be worked through was really important to this couple, and Susan helped them.
They were really a textbook case of a lot of these issues. They have been together 26 years. They both work in technology companies. One retired in 2005. The other one is still at a very famous technology company. And when they registered in 2002. In 2005, when community property was imposed on them, because it was retroactive to 2002, their net worth was very similar. One of them now, his net worth is five times what his net worth was in 2005. And they signed a post-nup, prenup, a registration agreement waiving mm-hmm. community property. And okay. they came to me and they said, "We've been told we're not sure we did that. We're not sure we waived community property." And I think they probably did, but the difference between for this couple, total net worth being divided by two and being half in each estate versus five times the net worth on one side and then the other, the estate tax ramifications of that if they break up, there's a huge ramification. And as Mark points out, it was stock options, and because these stock options were earned during the course of the registration, they were community property,
mm-hmm.
even though some of them were granted prior to the registration.
Okay, so I'm a little fuzzy still on. So why does it matter if this one individual of this couple, his holdings became worth five times as much as they had been previously, whereas the other person's holdings had not?
Well, the division of the asset is really important to the couple from a standpoint of what taxes may have to be paid should one of the two partners actually pass away. So it's really important to understand what has not been given as a gift but was automatically community property as the result of their status. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, community property matters two times, at divorce or at death. Obviously, at divorce, the one with five times as much is going to want to keep that.
Right.
The other guy is going to say, "Wait, I was home, you know, raising the children while you were off earning the money."
Yep.
That's
mm-hmm.
what community property is all about, is to protect right. the non-working spouse. At death, Mark is correct that it will bear on how much tax there is. Also, many couples I work with, one partner has lots and lots and lots of assets, has a taxable estate, will pay estate tax when he passes away, his estate will, and the other one doesn't use all of his exemption. And so there we're tempted to want to move some assets over so that we can use both exemptions. And the problem is, if you do that at this point, that's a taxable gift, and it just reduces what the wealthier spouse partner can leave at death. So this all gets very tricky, but it can have, when I ran these calculations the other day for these guys, the difference on the estate tax side was millions of dollars,
mm-hmm.
just based on the characterization.
When you actually get into the estate tax, it's very high. It's very costly. Just like probate, and that's another thing that I really want to make sure that my clients are never faced with, because probate in the state of California is quite costly. And if you can actually make sure things are lined up and in order, people will avoid probate, which is...
This is probably a question you can't answer, but do you think the federal government has a financial incentive not to... you know, make these laws fair? Because look at all this estate tax they'd be losing.
You know, I've never thought of that, but sure. I mean, that's an ugly thing to think about, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't be so cynical, I suppose. But there's one more thing I want to ask about before we run out of time, which is, it's amazing how fast a half an hour can go by with a complex topic like this. Community property in real estate. We talked about a house... being if it's community property, lay it out for me. Is it 50-50 split, or it depends on who owns it? And
community property is 50-50. So when we're talking about real estate, a couple of issues are important. One is reassessment. One of the big financial benefits of registered domestic partnership
or marriage
or same-sex marriage in California is when one partner passes away or actually just transfers property to his partner, there's an exemption from reassessment. I had a couple, they owned a big house in Berkeley that they'd had forever. Well, actually, it was one of the partners who owned it. And the minute this rule went into effect where we were able to transfer a property without reassessment, he came in, made a gigantic gift of half the house to his partner of 45 years because they wanted to own it together. And prior to that time, if he had made the gift of half the house, it would have been reassessed. And after owning it for 30 or 40 years, and financially they couldn't handle
that. Yeah, can't do that. Yeah,
so
right.
It's important. That is one. A very important consideration on unregistered domestic partnership where there's real estate is to know that there are different rules for reassessment.
You mentioned before we went on the air that there was, before we got to the end, you wanted to mention a bright spot or two.
Yeah. Susan and I were talking at the end of, as we kind of put our thoughts together, and we were saying how it's nice that things have been changing. And I think that we're working towards more equality. We still have quite a ways to go. But if you look at studies and what younger people are thinking right now of the discrimination that we face every day in the state and this country, I think we're moving in the direction that hopefully we will be recognized equally, and that's how things should be.
I want to thank my expert guests, financial advisor Mark Grace, a Morgan Stanley Smith Barney Vice President, and Susan Von Herman, a partner at Schiff Hardin Law Firm who specializes in trust and estate planning. And before I forget, Lambda Legal has information about this kind of, about this, all kinds of stuff within this area of law, right? And I know they lead some symposiums every once in a while.
Yeah, they're putting on a program coming right up. It's a very good program where they cover a lot of these issues.
And I apologize, I don't have the date right in front of me, but you can find information about that online at lambdalegal.org. That's LAMBDA legal.org. And you can learn more about Mark Grace's and Susan Von Herman's firms at schiffhardin.com, schiffhardin.com. And do you want to give your email address on
your
website?
Sure. My email address is mark.grace@morganstanleysmithbarney.com.
That was the whole thing. Morganstanleysmithbarney.com. Okay.
Thanks, Eric.
You've been listening to Out in the Bay, independently produced by me and Marilyn Pittman. We've been producing Out in the Bay for more than 7 years. Many of you have told us how entertaining and informative you find it. We appreciate those words of support. We'd like your financial support, too. We thank KALW for studio use and airtime. As an independent production, we receive no financial assistance from KALW. However, it's easy and tax-deductible to help keep Out in the Bay going strong. Just go to our website, outinthebay.com, hit the donate button, and make a contribution, big or small. And don't forget matching funds from your employer. That's outinthebay.com, where you can also sign up for free weekly podcasts, listen to 6 months' worth of archive shows, and sign up for Stitcher, the app that lets you download radio programs to mobile devices. It's all free on our website, outinthebay.com. I want to thank WY Enterprises for maintaining our website, outinthebay.com. Services for your life and your business, WY Enterprises. Thanks also to our engineer this week, Joanne Marr. So I'm curious to know, folks, how you like our new theme music. Joanne, if you can pop that up a second. It was composed and performed by San Francisco musician Holly Ann Mead. You can learn more about Holly on her blog, hollymead.tumblr.com, and about her tango ensemble online at redwoodtango.com. We'd love to hear from you with segment suggestions, general comments, and questions. So write to us, eric@outinthebay.com and marilyn@outinthebay.com. I'm Eric Jansen. Thanks for listening.